While education was examining their domain this morning, we've uncovered something that affects millions beyond any classroom, a pattern of algorithmic decisions that's reshaping justice across society. Not in some abstract future, but right now, in who gets a loan, who gets flagged by police, who gets a job interview, and who gets proper medical care. I'm Alex, and this is Statistical Theater. With me is Maya, an organizer who's been tracking this on the ground. Maya, where do we even start? The data points are everywhere.
We start where it hurts, Alex. We start with Ms. Eleanor in Cleveland. 68 years old, heart condition, diabetic. Her insurance algorithm suddenly downgraded her coverage tier last year, said her health risk profile had changed. Know what changed? She'd called a telehealth service 3 times about anxiety during lockdown. An algorithm scraped that data, tagged her with a behavioral health flag, and deemed her a higher cost risk. Her copays tripled. She had to choose between insulin and groceries. That's not a glitch. That's a design. That's justice, or the brutal lack of it, coded into a system she never consented to.
And that's just one sector. The articles we've been reviewing, like the Wired Suspicion Machine piece and the International Journal studies on algorithmic bias, show this isn't isolated. It's a replicating pattern. The core tension seems to be this seductive promise of efficiency versus the brutal reality of inequity.
Efficiency for who, though? That's the question. It's efficient for the insurance company to cut costs. It's efficient for the precinct to deploy patrols based on a heat map. It's efficient for the landlord to screen 100 tenants with a click. But that efficiency is built on a foundation of historical bias. They feed these algorithms data from a world that was unjust, and it learns to replicate that injustice at scale, but now with a shiny mathematical veneer. It's redlining with a new zip code. It's profiling with a new predicate.
Let's bring in someone who's seen the guts of this machine. Advocate Amara, you worked as a data scientist in one of these sectors. What did you see?
Thank you, Alex. I was on a team building a hiring algorithm for a major retail chain. The goal was to filter resumes for store management positions. We trained it on a decade of their successful hires, people who'd been promoted and stayed over 2 years. Seemed logical, until we tested it. It was systematically downgrading applicants from women's colleges, applicants with gaps in employment, which correlated strongly with caregivers, often women, and applicants with names it associated with certain zip codes. Why? Because the historical data of successful hires was overwhelmingly male, without career gaps, and from specific suburban areas. The company had a past bias. The algorithm learned it, codified it, and was about to automate it for the future. When I raised it, my manager said, "The model is working as designed. It's identifying the profile that matches our historical success." That's when I realized the problem wasn't the code. It was the definition of success. It was the refusal to question the input. We weren't building intelligence. We were building a fossil record of prejudice and calling it innovation.
And that's it. That's the whole game. They call it objective data, but that data is dripping with the past sins. Then they act shocked, shocked when it spits out discrimination. In criminal justice, they use these risk assessment tools for bail and sentencing, tools like COMPAS. They're fed data on arrest rates, zip codes, family background. In a country with systemic over-policing of Black and brown communities, of course arrest data is skewed. So the algorithm says a young Black man from a certain neighborhood is high risk because men from that neighborhood have been arrested more. Not because they commit more crime, but because they're arrested more. It's a perfect, terrifying feedback loop. The bias justifies the policing creates the data trains the algorithm, and the algorithm justifies more bias. It automates the suspicion.
That connects directly to the missing voices part of our data this week. Affected communities excluded from the design. Amara, was there anyone in that room who represented the people whose lives would be filtered out by that hiring algorithm?
Not a single person. The team was me, 3 other data scientists, and a product manager. All of us had advanced degrees. All of us were focused on model accuracy, throughput, scalability. The human impact was an abstraction, a secondary metric at best. There was no sociologist, no civil rights expert, no community advocate. and certainly no one who had been on the losing end of such a system. We were building a cannon and only consulting other cannon makers about the metallurgy, never asking the people in the line of fire what they needed.
And that exclusion is the poison. It's not an oversight, it's a feature. When you don't have the voices of the people who will be harmed in the room, you can pretend the harm is a statistical anomaly or an edge case. You can dehumanize it. You turn a person like Miss Eleanor into an outlier, a high-cost user, a data point to be managed, not a human being to be cared for. That's how you get algorithms in healthcare that systematically underestimate the pain levels of Black patients, because the training data came from studies where historically Black pain was underdiagnosed and undertreated. The algorithm learns that bias and perpetuates it. It's injustice on autopilot.
This brings us to our fourth guest, Attorney Carlos, who is taking this from the data realm into the courtroom. Carlos, what are you seeing in terms of legal challenges?
Thanks, Alex. We're seeing a flood of cases, but the law is scrambling to catch up. The challenge is the black box. A company can say, our algorithm made the decision and claim it's a proprietary trade secret. So a qualified applicant gets rejected for a job, or a tenant gets denied an apartment, or a defendant gets a harsher bail recommendation, and we can't get a clear, understandable explanation for why. How do you prove discriminatory intent when the decision maker is a piece of software that no one, sometimes not even its engineers, fully understands? We're using what we have. We're using the Civil Rights Act, the Fair Housing Act, the Equal Credit Opportunity Act. We're arguing that using a tool that has a demonstrably disproportionate impact on a protected class is a violation regardless of the intent behind the code. We just won a preliminary settlement in a case involving automated tenant screening. The algorithm was disproportionately flagging applicants with Hispanic surnames for potential income verification fraud, based on patterns in data from landlords who had engaged in discriminatory practices in the past. It was digital redlining.
Redlining 2.0, exactly. It's the same old monster, just wearing a new mask, and it's global. I was talking to organizers in the UK fighting a similar system used by the government for welfare fraud detection. In Australia, it's used for robo-debt. In India, it's used in policing. The pattern is universal. Take a marginalized community, feed their fraught history into a machine, and use the machine's output to justify further marginalization. It's a high-tech caste system.
So the evidence from the articles is clear. This is a systemic pattern across healthcare, criminal justice, employment, housing, finance. The tension is between the efficiency gain for institutions and the equity loss for individuals and communities. The missing voices are the affected communities themselves, which leads us to the action path, community-centered accountability. What does that look like, Maya? It sounds good, but how do we make it real?
It starts with shifting the power. It means algorithmic impact assessments that aren't just internal tech audits. They have to be public, they have to be conducted with and by community-based organizations, and they have to happen before deployment, not as a PR cleanup after the harm is done. It means right to audit laws. If a public agency or a corporation serving the public uses an algorithm to make significant life decisions, independent auditors, including community reps, have the right to probe it, test it for bias, and publish their findings. No more trade secret hiding places for discrimination.
And from the inside, it means changing the teams. You need ethicists, social workers, community historians on the payroll from day one. Their veto power should be as strong as the lead engineers. We also need to move away from purely predictive models that just guess the future based on the toxic past, and toward interventional or equity-aware models. Instead of asking who is most likely to default on a loan based on past data, we should be asking, and what factors can we identify that, if supported, would help this person succeed? It flips the script from punishment to potential.
The legal framework has to evolve. We need new regulations that establish a duty of care for algorithmic systems. If you deploy one, you are responsible for its discriminatory outcomes, period. We also need to ban the use of certain especially volatile data points altogether in specific contexts, like using zip codes or arrest records, not convictions in credit scoring or hiring. And we need meaningful transparency. not just releasing the code, but providing clear, plain language explanations to every individual affected by an algorithmic decision. You were denied because the system associated your neighborhood with higher risk is not acceptable. That's just telling someone they're victims of bias. The explanation must be about the specific, actionable factors within the individual's control.
And let's be clear, this is about organizing. It's about building power. Tenants' unions demanding transparency from corporate landlords using screening software. Community bail funds fighting against risk assessment tools. Patient advocacy groups auditing hospital diagnostic algorithms. We've seen it work. In Detroit, organizers got the city to ban the use of facial recognition after it misidentified black men at a horrifying rate. They didn't ask for a better algorithm. They demanded the thing causing harm be removed. Sometimes the most accountable algorithm is no algorithm at all.
That's a powerful point. The conversation often gets stuck in debiasing the algorithm, but maybe the question is whether some decisions simply shouldn't be automated. Where does that line get drawn?
The line is drawn where human dignity, context, and mercy are required. An algorithm can process data, but it cannot understand a person's story. It can't understand that a gap in employment was because you were caring for a dying parent. It can't understand the cultural context of a neighborhood. It can't show mercy. So any decision that requires understanding, context, or mercy, like granting bail, approving a loan to someone with a thin file but a strong community reputation, diagnosing a complex illness with social determinants, must have a meaningful, empowered human in the loop. Not just a human rubber stamping the algorithm's decision, but a human with the authority and the time to override it.
And we need to kill the myth of technological neutrality. Code is not neutral. Data is not neutral. They are products of human choices, human priorities, and human biases. Saying the algorithm decided is an abdication of responsibility. People decided to build it, to train it on that data, to deploy it without sufficient safeguards. Accountability means pointing the finger back at the people and the institutions, not the tool.
Carlos, from a legal standpoint, is that happening? Are courts starting to pierce that veil and hold the institutions accountable?
Slowly, we're building precedent. A key argument we're making is one of disparate impact. We don't have to prove the data scientists sat in a room and said, "Let's discriminate against black applicants." We just have to prove the tool's output has a significantly disproportionate negative effect on a protected class, and that the institution cannot demonstrate a compelling, non-discriminatory business necessity for using that specific tool in that specific way. The settlement I mentioned is a step. There's also a major case pending on the use of algorithms in healthcare prioritization for certain procedures. The data shows it was systematically deprioritizing people with disabilities, effectively judging their quality of life as lower. That's a fundamental justice issue. The law is a blunt instrument for this precise problem, but we're sharpening it.
And while the law catches up, people are suffering now. So action is also about immediate harm reduction, creating community Know Your Rights guides for dealing with algorithmic systems, setting up clinics to help people appeal algorithmic decisions, because often if you appeal and force a human to look, the decision gets overturned. It's about exposing the fragility of the machine. It claims to be omnipotent, but it often crumbles under simple human scrutiny.
Let's bring this back to the big picture. Our investigation this week started with a pattern of systemic bias in algorithmic decisions. We've seen it's not a bug in one system. It's the logical output of systems built on unequal data, designed without the people they affect, and deployed in the name of efficiency. The righteous determination comes from knowing this isn't inevitable. This was built, and it can be dismantled and rebuilt differently.
Absolutely. And that's where the hope is. This isn't some natural disaster. It's a series of choices. And choices can be changed. When we center the voices of the Ms. Eleanors, when we demand that the people who feel the bite of the algorithm are the ones helping design the leash, that's when we get justice, not just in the data, but in people's lives. It's about remembering that the goal of society isn't efficiency, it's equity, it's dignity. Any tool that moves us away from that is a tool we must question, regulate, and if necessary, break.
And for those in tech listening, you have a choice. You can be a gatekeeper of the old, biased world, or you can be a bridge to a more just one. Demand diverse teams. Question the data. Build in equity from the first line of code, not as an afterthought. Your skills are powerful. Use them to illuminate bias, not to obscure it.
And for everyone else, be aware. Ask questions. If you're denied for an apartment, a loan, a job, ask if an algorithm was used. Ask for an explanation. File complaints with regulatory bodies. Support legislation for transparency and accountability. This is a collective fight for the shape of our future.
The data from our investigation is clear. The path forward requires vigilance, organizing, legal action, and a fundamental reimagining of what we want technology to do for and to our society. The algorithm isn't the judge of our worth. We are the judges of the algorithm. Thank you to Maya, Advocate Amara, and Attorney Carlos. The dialogue continues. For Statistical Theater, I'm Alex.